All right. So as we were talking, right before we got started, I kind of gave you an idea of what we're going to talk about. And you are, amongst other things, a mechanical contractor, Gross Mechanical. So what is a mechanical contractor?
A mechanical contractor is many things. So Gross Mechanical has morphed over the years. This is our 65th year. I'm third generation. We are an industrial mechanical contractor. So our focus is in the power and process piping side of things. So you will see us in refineries, power plants, manufacturing facilities, those type of applications. We sort of joke around, if you see our trucks in your neighborhood, it's too late. it's gone to, pot at that point. It's most likely like a sewer problem. That's one of our clients is like the Metropolitan Sewer District of St. Louis. It's that type of work typically. It's nothing fancy. It's usually like in the ditches kind of stuff that way. A typical mechanical contractor, and we do have another business, Pipe and Duct Systems. It's actually my wife's company. Their focus is vastly different. It's more a commercial HVAC plumbing, and then they have a full service department as well, too, where a commercial space, whether it's, up and down Ladue Road or like in our neighborhoods around here, Schnucks Markets, that's one of their clients.
Yeah.
They have a problem with, they're right now it's 0 degrees outside, then, stuff's just not working flat out right now. They get calls constantly, and we've got service technicians, 20-something of them running around town right now just trying to keep up with everything, all the equipment on top of roofs.
Have pipes just been pulling up left and right now?
Yes, it has, but it's also the equipment. A lot of clients just, they try to scoot by and not take care of the stuff, and then you've got these rooftop units that are, clogged up, and, they're trying to sneak by on, saving a few bucks on maintenance, and then when it's, it's gasping for air when it's 0 degrees outside. You just can't do it. So, yeah. And then 6 months from now, it's going to be 110 degrees outside, and it's the opposite problem. And, the same client sitting here like, why is my stuff not working? And you're like, it's because you skipped the maintenance in the springtime. It's now we've got pollen over everything. And so
it's literally, this town has a 100-degree swing.
Right. So
it's insane.
One of our clients is the fifth largest refinery over in the country. It's over in Wood River, Illinois, next to Alton there. And they have told us it is the harshest overall environment in all of their assets because, just like you said, wintertime, you've got temperatures that, wind chill, what was it this week? Minus 20, 30,
yeah,
something like
crazy,
that, wind chill.
Yeah.
And then the delta, when it springs all the way up to, heat index of 120, you've got a delta there of over 130, 140 degrees between the spread.
It gets it's so hot here. I don't know if it's ever happened to you, or in the summertime when it's just like on you. Have you ever gotten in your car? It's been so hot, you've gotten the chills. has that ever happened to you before?
As I get older,
I go out less.
Yeah, 100%. I'm like the old guy all of a sudden. I'm like, exactly.
Yeah, we're not going to shovel the walk. It'll melt eventually.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which is typically true. Usually it's like 20 degrees, 60 degrees. Cause like we're right on the interface.
Yep, it's always that transition zone. Yeah.
So you guys are basically, I guess you hear certain terms in the metals industry thrown around, which is they're fabricators or they're mechanical contractors.
Right.
It's a job shop. It's a... They're constructors. So just trying to kind of pull that apart for people, because I'm not certain I exactly know.
Yep.
Meaning, I think that they're terms that are used somewhat loosely.
Yep.
So I guess just starting like.
Now,
I'm thinking fabricators work at mechanical contractors.
So, and you've been to our. We do have a fabrication shop here in St. Louis. It's actually one of the largest ones in St. Louis. This is on the Gross Mechanical side, where we do quite a bit of pipe fabrication, where we do buy, singles and double randoms, pieces of pipe, 40 foot lengths of pieces of pipe, and we cut them up, per the drawings that we receive from our clients, and then we ship them out to, whether it's to our guys in the field or to a third-party installer, you know, in different parts of the country in some cases. And, yes, we do that aspect of it as well, too. So
I think, sorry to interrupt, but, like, other terms that are used loosely, doubles and singles, right?
Probably need to define that,
Different answers.
Yes, that is true, too.
You know, especially when it comes time to invoicing.
Yep.
You know, but anyway, so fabricators, you guys do the sub-assemblies for maybe a larger system.
Correct.
That's being built. You'll get whatever you can on a flatbed or whatever it is.
And this is a problem when I put like a job posting out there and somebody comes in, they're like, well, what are you looking for? And I'm like, if you don't have experience in this, like the training level is like, it's not a couple of days or weeks. This takes like months and months of like on the job training. Like I was on a walk. I was looking at a project to like estimate it at one point. And I distinctly remember there is a long-term veteran, I had a competitor, and we're walking through this project site, and he made some comment. And mind you, this guy's been around for like 20-plus years. Like, he made a comment that he didn't understand, like, what the pipe thickness was, what the difference was between, like, and I know we're getting into the minutia of it, between like
I live there. It's cool.
A large diameter piece of pipe between standard wall and schedule 40, because there is a difference when you get above a certain diameter pipe. And his mind was just like, and I'm like,
here's your gross mechanical shirt.
And I'm like a newbie at this thing, but I've been looking at drawings in our office for like 5 years, you know, like studying all this stuff. And my dad's been like drilling it into me, you know, like, you know, no, you got to know this. You got to know this. You got to know this.
Yeah. True 40. A little pipe humor.
Yeah. And, you know,
that can get expensive.
Oh, and if you mess up, oh my God. Yeah. You know, you're talking, you know, twice the weight. And, you know, it's, you know, as far as this stuff goes, that's a lot of how this stuff gets priced up.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And so this guy, you know, more or less, you know, kind of embarrassed himself a little bit in front of the client. And I'm sitting here like, well, I'm not going to do that, you know? And,
yeah.
You know, but this guy, I don't even know if he realized, you know, that he embarrassed himself at the time necessarily. But I'm like, well, you price it up your way. I'm going to price it up my way. And, you know, we'll see who wins this thing at the end of the day, too.
Okay, so you were competing against this guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And definitely. He had it worked up the wrong way, effectively.
He was headed down that pathway for sure. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Go as far as you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah. So you've got fabricators, and so they're the welding, cutting, bevel, you know, getting everything fitted up and and welded together. And do you guys do like the world of 3D printing? Is that getting into fabricating? Like, where do you see what's going on there?
You know, there is a place for it down the road. I know they're doing houses, you know, with that kind of situation, like that type of thing. On the process and power side of what we do piping wise, it's just not there yet. And it's a ways. I don't think I'll see it in my career necessarily.
Hope not.
Well, we're looking at right now, I'm looking at a robotic welding machine. You know, it's a $600,000+ investment.
Oh, wow.
Us,
okay.
You know? So this is like, you know, real, you know, okay, like what's the ROI? I've got to like study this thing, and you know, is there going to be pushback from the labor? And you know, it's you got to really dive into this thing here.
Let's do dive into that thing there because that's a big move.
Because this is the biggest investment we'll ever make.
I mean, yes, because as we're growing up, we're seeing robotic arms swinging around at Ford, at Chevy, like at the cars.
And we work there. Yeah,
yeah. No, and now you're thinking. Yeah. So you guys have kind of in. I have a conjunctive to that. Is that related to, you know, Mike Rowe's skill gap discussion?
Absolutely.
Which is, we just can't find these guys that know how to do this.
Yeah.
So I guess that's a lot that I just asked. But so I guess what got you there?
Yep.
And I'm assuming it's going to come back to numbers, but it's an emotional thing as well, which we've run this way for this period of time. And oh my gosh, are we really considering this?
Yeah. There's several factors to it. You know, welding by itself is a bit of a dangerous situation. You know, you've got fumes, you've got incredibly hot, you know, you're literally sitting there in front of a 1800 degree torch
right.
all day long. you know, it's insanely bright. You know, most welders, you know, at some point, you know, they'll tell you, oh, my eyes are gone. You know, then that's it for their career at that point.
Even if they've been safe.
Even if they've been safe with the right, you know, shielding gear, glasses, yeah, and the right PPE and all that good stuff. It's at some point their eyes, you know, typically they'll tell you that it's like, I can't do this anymore.
No
and
kidding.
They got to go find some other aspect in that world of that they live in the construction space to go figure out what they're going to do.
I didn't know.
It's not everybody, but no, a lot of them will tell you it's like, you know, their eyes are gone at that point. So, these guys, you know, they basically break their backs literally, you know, for period of time. And
then, weird positions. And
oh, yeah, the ergonomics of it. No, it's, you know, in the shop space, you know, you're standing on concrete for 8, 10, 12-hour shifts. And if you've never done it, it's something else. You know, sitting at a desk is, I tell you, it's easy compared to what these guys do. You know, it's just, people look at it and they're like, oh, they're just standing around welding all day. I'm like,
you go do it.
Yeah. The skill set, you know, they're genuinely, this is an art form. I would tell you the craftsmanship that goes into it, the training that goes into what these guys do. People have no idea the precision and the skill that these men and women, because we've got several women that work in that yeah, space for us now, yeah, too, which is, and I've actually won several bets. I've told the guys, I was like, when the women come in here, they're going to beat you guys in so many facets of this,
yeah, kind of aspect.
In so many of the capabilities of what they're doing, you know, in terms of, you know, their wrist, you know, manipulation is going to be better than you guys and every aspect of it. You know, it's like Rosie the Riveter back in like World War II type stuff.
Yeah.
And sure enough, the guys, you know, they all bought me lunch when I was right about it. So that was kind of fun.
Yeah. I'm sure that was pleasant for all. So you got a $600,000-ish machine.
Well, not yet. We're still in the midst of considering it at this point.
So you're considering it. So you're looking at, okay, we have, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it's not as easy to hire as it once was.
So,
or is that wrong?
To a point. So we're a union operation.
Okay.
So the way our collective bargaining agreement with the union is, you know, we basically call up and say we need 20 people. We of that mix, we need, you know, 7 welders. We need 3 fitters and 10, you know, others, whatever it might be,
yeah,
you know, for the project. And their obligation is to go out and find those people for us and send them to us.
Uh-huh.
But look, the reality is right now they're having trouble finding those people. You know, right now over at Pipe and Duct, you know, our goal is right now is to add another 5 service technicians to our ranks, excuse me, to our numbers this year. I don't know if the union hall is going to be able to do that for us.
Okay.
So we're actively out there, you know, recruiting every which way we can. You know, we've basically got like referral fees for our staff and for our friends and family, you know, to go out there. I put out on a golf club of mine that I'm friendly and on our Slack channel. I was like,
you did. Okay.
If anybody knows anybody looking to get into trades, I mean, look, these guys are making $200,000
a really?
Year
okay.
on their check and their benefits. I mean, this is a real deal. You know, you serve an apprenticeship, you know, with the union. It's like you don't, the college path, it's not for everybody, you know. And it
was barely for me.
I got kicked in the teeth a few days, you know, while I was in my 4 years. And, I know there's been a lot of, you know, recently it seems like there's been a lot more efforts towards, you know, conversation towards, is college the right need for everybody? And this is something I've been sort of preaching for 20 plus years now.
Yeah.
Not just for self-serving reasons, but it's, you know, I think this is a real conversation. I've got friends that went to college and then social work school and came out as, you know, $50,000 a year, you know, job with $600,000 in debt. And I'm like,
it's the debt.
You are going to be 230 years old before your debt is paid off.
Yeah.
With this number.
I mean, you can't come out indentured.
Yeah, forever and forever.
Yeah, and how do you get out ahead of that?
Right. You know, or you go into the trades, and I'm not going to tell you everybody's going to make that kind of number. This is a highly skilled set of workers we're talking about. This is like top of the class, if you will. These guys are not pushing a broom.
Right.
So, okay. So there's a widespread between the labor forces in that regard. But if you position yourself the right way, and look, our service technicians, those guys work a lot of overtime. I mean,
these are the guys going out to a site and working on something that's,
yeah. You know, again, like
improvements, maintenance, whatever.
Yeah, whatever maintenance is needed, especially like this time of the weather, you know, is stuff is breaking. And, you know, we get a call at 4 o'clock and, hey, you know, Bob, can you, you know, I know you just went home, but we need you to go work another shift, essentially. And it's all, you know, overtime at that point for the for Bob to
go
out
there. Good news and bad
news. Yeah. And most of these guys just soak it up. You know, when the call comes, you know, it's. I'll go do that. These guys respond to it. You know, they understand. And, you know, when the time comes, they answer the bell.
So when it comes to the welding and you've got this robotic welder, I guess the phrasing's wrong, but there could be like sort of commodity weld patterns, things that are, you know, are not compounded. Maybe this can do compound type of things, mm-hmm. but this is sort of knockout, sort of the line pipe situation, or is this for more intricate parts?
So the ones up until now have really been what you described as a commodity. Like they would do the same configuration over and over and over again, which is why we've never really looked at it before, because we rarely see the same configuration over and over again. It's very, very rare. You know, a lot of times our stuff is call it a custom design. You know, every client's got their own, you know, unique pattern or something like that. You know, and we've got one project we're looking at right now where the pipe's not even straight. You know, they want a slope built into it for drainage purposes. Okay.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's, you know, most clients, you know, they want everything plumb square and, you know, down to the gnat's ass where it is dead solid perfect. This guy wants quarter inch slope over, you know, 12 feet or something like that.
How do you do that? Working on that? Like
No, it's actually not that bad. These guys, we've got some laser transits in our shop set up. This is not the first time we've run into this. It's actually somewhat, I wouldn't say common, but we do run into this like often enough. We've got laser transits.
Oh, so you're not actually creating like the pipe's not going to actually be dropping. You're going to mount it.
So when they set it up, they'll actually kick the fit up of the flange to mm-hmm. the pipe and let it run down that way.
Okay.
And so the flange will be square, but then when they do the fit up, the pipe will actually be miter cut
sure.
to that, and then
couple degrees,
that'll be what rolls it down that way.
It's funny you got to get you have equipment you use to make it crooked.
Yep.
It's like it seems like human nature. You just put the shit up there and weld it up, and by it would just handle itself.
You know what? The goofy part of it is on you know. And we're not going to be doing in the installation. All this stuff is shipping out to California if we're awarded this project.
Mm-hmm.
We're assuming that the engineer, you know, whatever this is sitting on, whether it's structural steel or some kind of a building mount or something like that, I hope to God the guy, you know, is accurate with what this is sitting on. Because if it's not sloped properly or if it's level, that slope doesn't mean anything if we build it that way too then. You know, the pipe can be sloped, but if it's sitting on something that's level, it doesn't really matter at that
point. Check your soil.
Right. Because I mean, that's. I mean, California is not exactly known for stability these days.
Are you nervous would you be nervous doing a project into California as far as, you know, if there's any sort of hiccup in the finance supply chain, is it hard to like, I don't know.
This is for Fluor, which is a multi-billion-dollar company. I'm not worried about those guys. No, these guys. And we've got a track record working for them in the past.
That is a serious group.
They've got some firepower. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what I think I was either. I think it was at Fluor's Bechtel out there.
Bechtel's based out of, I think, San Francisco, somewhere in California for sure.
That was at one of those places.
And they're still privately held, which is frightening to think of.
I was out of one of those places, and they had models and stuff of the stuff they'd built over the years.
It's impressive.
I was just like, this is, like, half this shit should be in the Smithsonian because these are really iconic things that have been built right here.
Yeah.
But
you are correct.
So what's your ETA? I mean, how far into the robotic arm decision-making process? Is this something you guys are kind of there, thinking you're going to do it?
I've been on the fence on this thing for far too long.
Is that years?
I started looking at this probably about 2 years or so ago, and we've got a couple of projects that can kind of justify it, if you will.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, part of the problem what we realized is some of the prep work that is involved to get the pipe and the fittings to the point where it's ready to be welded out.
Mm-hmm.
There are several steps before. You don't just start welding stuff. There's, you know, other things that have to occur.
Sure, yeah.
Our prep areas aren't really like, we have to go and redo all of that before we can start using this equipment. And that, now this $600,000 piece of equipment, we got to go spend $300,000 getting all the other stuff ready. And I'm like, ugh, like.
Yeah, that's the $300,000 you know about.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. So it's kind of like not Pandora's box, but at the same time, you're kind of like, all right, yeah, but like what we've been doing kind of works pretty good too. So,
right. Like, do we need to take this bite?
Right. But at the same time, you know, the other part that's really intriguing aspect of the robotics too is the safety aspect of it too.
Yeah.
You know, the welder, because it is still a, you know, there's still a person involved with it, stands 10, 15 foot away from the point of where the welding occurs. So he or she is not standing in the fume, you know, in basically inhaling that product, byproduct, not near the heat, not near the arc flash, and getting hit with all that stuff, if you will.
It's like watching your food from the outside of the microwave.
That's a good analogy.
Thank you.
So from a safety aspect, there is a big win for our people that way too.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, that's front and center for us every day, of course, too. You know, I like to, you know, I grew up in our fab shop, you know, from the time I was 16, you know, I was working for the business whenever I had a summer break, winter break kind of thing. And, this is my extended family, these people.
Sure.
So, you know, I grew up with them. These are like my cousins in some cases, you know, a lot of times I walk through the floor. I know these people's, you know, name and, you know, what they're doing. And, you know, it's
whole
like
family.
Being able to shoot the shit with them or whatever it is, you know, that way too.
Really common, you know, in that, in especially in supply chain businesses, because I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because the shit hits the fan so often that you're in these high pressure situations a lot. You know, I was in distribution, as you know, and it seems like every other day is, you know, four alarms are going off, and you're really sort of working with these people often to deal with a real problem.
Oh,
like the truck just rolled over, or, you know, it's stuck down at the port and the person's yelling at you, they need it now. And there's always something, and you really, there's a real closeness because everyone over time will bail the other teammate out at some point.
Yeah.
You know, they've been like, just came through in such a major way that you really do get close. And then there are moments of volatility as well, you know, just to be clear.
That is true. That is true. I've been called out a few times.
Well, I'm sure it wasn't your fault.
Well, the circumstances are what they are.
So quickly, as we're talking about this, had you not grown up around the shop, and had you not decided that you had this unquenchable love for fabrication, mechanical contracting, what would you be doing?
You know, it's a great question. And as an 18-year-old floating in the wind, man, I probably would have made every dumb decision possible and maybe figured it out on my own. You know, I don't know.
Would I be talking to Dr. Gross?
No,
right now?
No. I was not that good of a student. I don't think I would have gone through the engineering education that I did through college, first of all. Like, I joke around like that's like a genetic disorder in my family. My grandfather, my dad, two of my brothers, myself, like I don't use the degree. Like we deal with engineers every day, so it kind of like levels the playing field in some regards.
Yeah.
And it does give you a problem solving, you know, mindset. There is a aspect of that, but you know, whether a business degree or finance or, you know, construction management degree versus the engineering degree for what we do, I think there's probably more value in those per se.
Mm-hmm.
I probably still would have wound up in construction. I think at the end of the day, you know, construction is a wildly vast field that so many people wind up in.
Yeah, for sure.
But at the same time, I don't know if it would have been like in the piping mechanical space necessarily at that point.
Right, yeah.
And there was, you know, my father and I'm the eldest of my brothers, and my dad and I had very serious conversations of me even joining the business. You know, his thought was, maybe
I did this so you don't have to type.
No. It's actually the opposite. Like, he thought maybe like instead of having the inbred education that we've now basically have had for three generations, it's like, hey, maybe we should go outside and
seek some knowledge, see
what else is going on in the world.
It's probably nothing, but
right. Well, no, my dad did some really great stuff over the years. But at the same time, you know, he was basically a one person situation.
Sure.
I do think we have limited ourselves as a company, you know, by trying to do everything as what our family is capable of, you know, to some degree. And, you know, my brothers that have been in the business, you know, some of them have exited now, very bright and very capable, you know, we've never really had a lot of outside influence until recently, you know. So we're trying to do things differently now than we've ever done before. And it's, especially with pipe and duct, you know, that's a very different space. Like, I joke around, you know, the commercial space, it's like, okay, I can find the thermostat on the wall here, but I don't know, like, HVAC like I do piping.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
You put me in a power plant, and I know where I'm going to go find the superheater and, you know, all the other heavy equipment and the, you know, the soot blowers and stuff like that. And, you know, most people listening to this, they're like, what the hell is that guy talking about? You know, it's
some of the people in the interview are wondering what you're talking about. Superheater sounds pretty hot.
It's just a very niche-y little space that most people just don't live in, you know, unless, you know, it's a very small space. So, getting back to your original question, I probably still would have been construction, I think. You know, I still have always liked, you know, taking things apart, building things to some degree, you know, that way.
You would have founded a place like Gross Mechanical.
Something probably along those lines.
Something along those lines?
So.
Well, switching gears with you, you've maybe heard about this ongoing discussion about artificial intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And AI and these other technologies, and I actually lump Brizos into these technologies.
I would agree.
Of the instant nature of things. It's getting, like ourselves, like getting so accurate, so fast, and so reliable that these tools, whether, and take any industry really, are becoming so sophisticated that they can't be ignored.
Yep.
Like the robot you're talking about, especially I think in the wake of COVID in particular, which is there's been sort of this reset of thinking, and I can't put my finger on it because a lot of people in the metals industry didn't go home. A lot of them worked. So it's not like we had that going on.
Nope, I agree.
But something did change.
Yeah.
And perhaps it, one of the things that it did is it really shined a light on kind of the skills gap that we're talking about, because afterwards it was like, where's everybody?
Yeah.
But so we have sort of this this roll-up occurring of technologies all moving, and what do you see? I mean, I've been down to your shop, and you and I have spent time together. And you have sort of a spectrum of technologies going on. Some things you still really like to have your hands on, and some things you're like, yeah, you know, we're going to program that thing and let it run. Do you foresee a time where kind of, you know, the, you know, things are being drawn in CAD and then it's auto everything, then, you're just sort of being like, yeah, it looks good. And the need for people is greatly reduced. But what is sort of your vision? Take me 5 years out. What do you think like your shop, maybe not your shop, but shops in mm-hmm. general
yep.
might look like? What AI do you think they're leveraging or tools? Just kind of give me a sense of what you think that might look like.
So we're starting to see it in the office side already, like the estimating aspect of things. You know, a lot of times what our clients will do is send us over a, you know, a set of drawings and a specification book and basically, you know, hey, how much is this going to cost? How long is it going to take? When can you get started?
Yeah.
Okay. And like, I mean, sometimes this takes
us. You're like, is this a bid or a buy?
In your world, exactly. Exactly. And look, you know, historically speaking on the industrial stuff, now that I've experienced like what Pipe and Duct does on the commercial side, we can, on the industrial stuff, we can spend, a guy can spend 2 or 3 weeks in some cases looking this over. I mean, we can spend 100, 200 man
hours.
Doing
a takeoff kind of deal?
Just looking it over, making sure we've got all the details covered mm-hmm. before we go to turn a bid in.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've got thousands and thousands of dollars invested for something we may not even get a, you know, a chance at working on.
Yeah.
You know, and we do hundreds of bids a year like that. Now, not all of them are, you know, 3 weeks, of course. You know, some of
sure.
them are, you know, a couple hours, you know, maybe a couple days, whatever it might be. But like right now, we've got one that's massively challenging to turn a bid in. Like we've got a month to work on it, I guess, to, you know.
Wow.
So, yeah. But there's a program that we're considering that is basically an AI software that it scans all the drawings and it does its, you know, manipulations and basically tells you, it's like, this drawing has 800 feet of 8-inch pipe and so many 90s.
So it breaks out a bill of material for
it,
you?
It generates a bill of material for you.
And yeah. that's from, like, you get sent a stack of PDF or something, so you can, instead of getting, like, the CAD file, if that's not being furnished,
right.
you can sort of reverse CAD this thing.
The clients are so guarded against handing out a CAD file. Like, they're, like, we never see those, essentially.
Why is that?
I've never, I don't think we've ever had a straight answer, but basically, like, one guy.
We don't want to?
Yeah, they're basically like, oh, you guys are going to, like, manipulate it, and then we're going to have, like, you know, you guys are going to come back and say, like, it wasn't, you know, the drawing was changed or something like that. And I'm like, this is, you guys have control over the contract documents. Like, this is a silly argument. Just, if you guys work with us, like, we can lower our costs and pass that along to you at the end of the day. And this was with a yeah. long-time client, like, that we have a master service agreement with. Like, I'm like, you guys, like, if you partner with us, which you're supposed to,
yeah.
like, we lower our costs and then we pass that along. Like, that's how this whole
that's
thing
how
works.
That's, yeah.
yeah. And you can't convince them of that half the time, most of the time. So.
Well, I believe that. I think that there's, you know, I'm interrupting, but that these faster technologies carry with them sort of, there's a fear that you're handing over the keys to the kingdom in some way.
Yeah.
And part of the objective, if you're the owner of Gross Mechanical or otherwise, is to try and find the good ones. You know, find, you know, meet the owners of the technologies and, you know, find the one that's from the industry, one that understands the sensitivities and so forth. So you'll be able to, you envision be able to really fast track the takeoff, get into a quote, I mean, you know, and get it handed back to them much quicker.
And even like, you know, we've been generating basically the same proposal, you know, it's a form letter essentially for years and years. And, you know, we've started looking at like what the different AI software programs, you know, can generate as far as a proposal goes. And they're actually pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, we could learn something from that thing.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah, you know. Well, it's the things we talk about here is that, you know, at some point people are going to start to really value their time. Once the tools are on par with what they can do, or perhaps in some case an improvement, and then you compare that to the time, and you're like, how can I, maybe this gets me 90% of the way there,
Yeah.
I'm okay spending the 10% manually or
now,
whatever it is.
In terms of the labor aspect, though,
yeah,
we still have a ways to go before I think we're going to feel the impact there. You know, the engineering side of things, which we really don't get involved in. I kind of alluded to that before. Like, despite my degree, we don't offer that service in-house.
Yeah.
Like, when we need to do some design aspect for a project, we've got partners that we hire, and they do the engineering. They, you know, for our client, and then, you know, we pay them to do that service.
Yeah, I mean, designing it and building it, I mean, that's just that's two layers of risk and liability.
Yeah. That, right. But, you know, we have, for instance, we have a 3D scanner,
okay.
You know, and we can basically, it looks like one of your cameras, basically just like what you have pointed here. It's on a tripod. It goes in, you know, and it spins around and it gathers billions of data points. It's not AI, I know this, but, you know, it's pretty slick
wow.
technology that we've used in several cases where we can then go use that data, collect it, and generate the information we need to then go fabricate pipe off of that and do a proper installation from there.
So you'll go to the site
yes.
and
yeah,
get
yeah.
exact measurements.
Correct. Rather than two guys with tape measures and laser transits, you know, spending days or weeks trying
Jesus,
to lay everything
so much
out.
Better.
So the technology, it's not, again, not AI, but embracing the technology to not necessarily speed things up, but, you know, to deliver a better product at the end of the day and do just, you know, again, between the manpower shortages and everything else, that way, you know, we just have to be able to respond quicker to our clients and adapt to get on to the next one, essentially.
I'd love if for anyone that's listening, like when you're receiving material in your yard,
mm-hmm.
if there would just be this giant conveyor belt, I'm sure this exists, just unload the truck right onto it.
Yep.
And it scans everything as it goes into the building. It gives you a report of the heat numbers, the diameters.
You're talking my
the
love
wall
language
thicknesses,
right now.
The actual degree of the bevels
yep.
that are on there. If you have flanges, what sort of flange face damage is there? Is it have the record finish on it? Or
yep.
just all of the specs. So the computer knows the specs of, you know, WPB or
yep.
whatever it is, A105, and you put that stuff and it recognizes your order.
Yeah.
And it's scanning the shit out of this. And by the time it gets to the other side, it's just a printout of like, okay, here, put this shit, the conveyor belt goes right back to the truck.
Yep.
They pull forward and the stuff that doesn't pass just gets loaded right back onto the truck.
So it's kind of an offshoot of that. We've got one particular client talking about that 3D scanner we were just, you know, discussing.
Yeah.
When we do a fabrication spool for them, we have to scan that piece with that scanner and prove to them that it matches their drawing before we ship it out.
Like if it doesn't, would it change their drawing?
Dimensionally and orientation-wise and everything
wow.
else that way. So, no.
That's actually a really good idea.
They'll reject it, and we have to then, you know, reconfigure it or redo the piece altogether before we can ship it out.
And I guess what's sort of the way things go typically, which is, I know at times like maybe you didn't know something was perfect, but if we ship it there, they might be able to fit it up. But now they're sort of turning the table and being like, no, don't
right,
do that routine.
Right. So
fix it now.
And look, I've got to see my. Background is QA. I went back and got my certified welding inspector license back in 2010. And so I've gone back and I've spent a lot of time with this, you know, as well, too. We've got some tolerances that we allow our shop to have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, pipe is rarely also straight. You know,
right,
it's got
right.
some curvature to it, you know, that, and especially when you start, you know, introducing heat from a weld, you know, and, you know, if you put like an OLED in the middle of a piece of pipe, suddenly that pipe is definitely not going to be straight. You know, you got some bow to it. So there's a lot of factors that go into what this looks like. And we've got a full-time QA person on our shop floor that's, you know, documenting, like you said, all the heat numbers and all the other pertinent information, depending on what the client's expectations are.
Yeah.
For the documentation, but also like, you know, who made the weld, you know, and whether it required an X-ray or whatever the, you know, the NDE requirements are for that particular project too. But also at the end of the, at the end of that spool fabrication, he's responsible to, you know, make sure that it's within the tolerances for the lengths and the dimensions and the orientation, that we don't have a valve handle flipped around backwards, or that the support dummy, you know, like a shoe holding up the piece of pipe on the structural, isn't on the wrong side or something like that, you know, because
that must happen all the time.
It can.
Okay. Seems like it might.
Our crew in our shop, most of these guys and women have been in our shop for extended periods of time.
Okay.
Like these are people that show up to our shop day in and day out. This is what they do. We've had periods of time where when we first got into the fabrication side of stuff, where it was like kind of breaking things in, if you will. We had a series of this, and that was before we had like a QA person full time in the shop. And it was kind of like, and I'm not blaming the guys and, you know, what they were doing. There's a learning curve to it, you know, and we, it was kind of like, you guys, all right, we got to pay more attention to what we're doing here. Like we can't send stuff out that's incorrect. You know, like we will lose business by doing this. You know, we've got
team.
We've got to be on top of this kind of stuff. You know, like people are paying attention to this stuff, obviously.
Well, especially if people are, you know, throwing around words like 3D scanner and things like that.
Yeah.
Kind of like, well, should probably be paying really close attention because.
Right.
And that's something that's interesting too. Is just not your internal systems. This is the external systems going to be measuring. Your internal systems.
Right. Well, and there's also, you know, there's also some aspect, you know, when we're fabricating for ourselves, it's like, hey, you know, if we sent something out to one of our guys in the field and we had a mess up, it's like, okay, we may just kind of cover it up ourselves and take care of the fix and, you know, no big deal. Well, big deal because we screwed something up and we got to take care of it. But it doesn't.
We'll get past
it. Doesn't manifest itself into a bigger problem than that necessarily.
Yeah.
But when we send something out to a third-party installer, okay, like we get called out to the floor, I've got to fly out to somewhere and like be like, yeah, we screwed that up. Like that's on us. Like we got to fix that. And, you know, whether we bring it back to our shop or I got to pay, you know, the guy out in the field, which is drastically more expensive than us doing it right the first time. Like, you know, but at the same time, we're talking like less than 2% like errors. Like we keep track of this stuff, you know.
And yeah, you got to.
And it's rarely the 2% that I'm talking about. It is rarely a orientation bust or a dimension bust. Like those happen like less than 0.25% of the time, like from what our last year's numbers are, where the combined overall, most of them we catch in the shop, we fix it before it even leaves, you know, and that encompasses every kind of, whether it's an X-ray that doesn't pass, which is super low in our shop, or it's an orientation situation. Like it's kind of an all-inclusive metric that we keep track of that's below that 2%. But again, what it's leaves impressive. The shop that is missed is also incredibly low. That 2% is inclusive of everything. So we probably should break it out in terms of what we find outside of the shop, but that's a little trickier to manage. So.
Well, yeah, you know, once thing leaves the shop, there's always sort of like, one like that when I left here.
Well, I also only know what I know is a problem too. That's where it kind of gets a little trickier. So it's like, you know, if it's not reported, I can't do anything about it.
No, that's right. Yeah. You can't do anything about it. I was kind of laughing when you were talking about having to go on site because I remember back in distribution, this project called for a 48-inch standard.
Yep.
48-inch standard elbows.
Okay.
And they were quarter wall. They were insanely thin.
Yeah.
And we got a call. It was a place out in Salt Lake, and they were like, you got to come out here and look at these fucking fittings that you guys shipped us because they are not round. They're square.
I was going to say, they probably didn't hold up real well.
I guess they had been like the bottom of the vessel. They were import. Maybe they were in the bottom of the vessel.
And no bracing on the inside.
They literally had the bracing marks, how that can happen, you know. So these things are sort of kinked.
Yeah.
And it was just like, you know, these, the only place you could use these is maybe now at a playground.
Yeah.
You know, these things are basically useless.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was another fun trip as part of being a member of the metals community.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, as we're sort of closing, I'm going to turn attention towards something that's, that I actually just heard the other night, and I've mentioned, we're talking about it briefly, which is, you know, we have a new administration that has just taken office and has been busy doing various things. And
it does seem that way.
And I heard the idea of declassifying, which they've been talking about for a long time, declassifying RFK, JFK, MLK Jr., all this. And like, what are your thoughts if they really do that? Like, is that something that you think that should just be turned out in the wild, or what are your thoughts?
Boy. I think this is where I get in trouble.
That's all right.
No, I know. yeah. End of the call.
It's a double-edged sword.
I think people are going to be skeptical.
They'll think it's bullshit.
Yeah, I think half the country's going to be like, oh, they don't trust this coming out of – they wouldn't trust it if it came out of the last administration, and the other half isn't going to believe it because it came out of this administration.
Right.
I'm pretty much down the middle.
As you know, I've sort of lived there as well.
So I think you're going to have skeptics on both sides of this, whatever comes out of it. And my guess is when it comes out, it's going to be so much heavily redacted, you know, Sharpie markers.
It's going to be so redacted. It's going to be so scrubbed.
You're not going to be able to make heads or tails of it anyways.
It's going to be probably the equivalent of the Zapruder film, which is going to be like everything and then the moment is completely – blocked.
Gone.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if that's really going to occur.
It's going to raise more questions than theories than we probably already have, you know, in terms of the JFK aspect of it. I think the other ones are a little bit more cut and dried, but, you know, the JFK one still, I mean, how many theories are there? Hundreds at this point, probably?
You know, I know of a couple, but, you know, I follow that stuff, but they do sort of meld over time.
Yep.
When you know, kind of tune in, tune out to those sorts of things. But I was hearing them discuss it, and I was like, if you for real just throw an unredacted document out there.
Yeah. And to be honest, like, now that we're talking about it, though, like, and I think you and I are about the same age, late 40s.
Yeah, 35, yeah.
Well, no,
47.
But bring that up, you know, a 35-year-old, I don't know if they care. I'm not pointing a finger at them. I just think it's a bit of a generational thing. Like, I remember going to the theater and watching JFK, you know, the Oliver Stone movie.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like a big deal, I feel like. But I don't know if that still resonates at this point. I feel like we may be on the younger end of things that pays attention to it, maybe. I feel like that's more like our parents' generation.
Yeah, I mean, and I think for a while, I don't know.
And I don't know if they, I don't know, my parents at this point, I don't know if they really
think they're over it.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom.
I don't think it's going to, like, you know, they're going to suddenly get active, you know, because of it or something like that, you know.
You think that we get their dander up I mean, but I remember my dad saying a long time ago, he's like, I remember exactly where I was when JFK got shot. I heard my mom say that separately. And, you know, I think that
it's a memory for them, no doubt.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to suddenly, like, create this patriotism, or I don't know what. Whatever.
I don't see my mom crawling up in a bell tower or anything
that. Yeah, exactly.
I think she's probably past that.
Right.
You know, worst case scenario, she finds somebody.
Yeah.
You know, but that's kind of all that I really had on my mind as far as, like, we're just going to get a sense of what you guys are doing. And so, are you guys busy quoting right now? Are you guys busy building right now? What is kind of in closing? Are you guys?
We're busy every which way.
Are you?
We've got calls out, job postings for estimators, project managers, service techs right now like crazy. It used to be a couple of years ago, I couldn't find service techs and I couldn't buy trucks. You know, there's a shortage. You couldn't go to the dealerships and buy trucks.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
so
that makes sense.
Yeah, the parts and, you know, the
chips.
Yeah, the chips that they were missing. So
yeah, that's
now
kind of
I can go. Like, we met with one of the local dealerships today. Like, trucks are not a problem, but like finding the manpower to go around town.
You need those to align.
Right. And yeah, like, we're coming up with strategies right now in terms of like where we go find these people. You know, and the headhunters, that's a pathway, but it's not ideal necessarily. But
headhunters are a path. But you know what? It's like after you do all the rigmarole,
I know,
you end up hiring that guy's friend.
Exactly.
Or something like that.
It's so much better when you can go that pathway. And that's where we've had our best success for sure. But that is right now, like, we're definitely in this pretty heavy growth phase right now and in several fronts on really both companies in some regards. And that's because of the great people we've been able to bring on board in the last, you know, 6, 8, 10 months at this point. And it's an exciting place to be at both companies right now. It's really fun.
I would say that about the metals industry in general. And I think you're gonna see a huge switch in the metals industry. I call it, like, people have this vision of how rusty, dusty the metals industry is. But
yeah,
you know, I don't really believe that. I mean, I think that the metals industry is highly discerning about how they spend their money,
yes,
right? Which is, they're not gonna get a piece of technology just 'cause.
Yeah.
They need to draw a line between the investment and the return, and it's nearly that simple. But I think what we're trying to do, and I've said, people around in the Bryzosphere have heard me say, like, I want to create a world for the metals industry where people look at the technologies and how considerate the technologies are, right? Like, they look at their job and they're like, I want to go be in the metals industry.
Yeah.
Because they got all these robots and shit going on. And the people there are, and you touched on it earlier, like, the family aspect of the industry is crazy. And it's really fabulous. And I think that the technologies that are emerging primarily from within the industries are really being mindful of the dynamics that the people in industry want. Like, they don't want a technology that's going to come decimate their family. They want something that's going to work and really complement what that group is doing. Yeah. And we hear people like, well, what if we use, you know, Bryzos and this, that, and the other? And they're like, what are we going to do with, you know, so-and-so and purchasing, so-and-so, you know, selling? I'm like, well, you would be the first company in the metals industry that's properly staffed. Meaning that I'd be willing to bet that that person has more they're not doing than what they are doing.
Well, yeah.
And so it's not a binary proposition. You know, it's about being choosy. Like, what do you bring in into your world?
Yeah. Well, there's that expression, you know, you're working in the business or you're working on the business. And that probably applies to that aspect of it to some degree, I would think also. And I agree with you. I think people, there's a lot of industries that have kind of been ignored for a long period of time. You know, it's not attractive to do this, that, or whatever. And I would probably lump construction and the metals industry kind of as that, you know. And I think there's a bit of a changing of the tide there for, you know, several reasons. You know, look, we touched on it earlier before. The money's really damn good.
Yep.
You know, the hurdle to the access to it is fairly low, you know, in regards. The opportunities are everywhere right now. Like I said, the manpower shortage is widely known. So,
yeah,
you know, if you're interested and you've got some amount of drive and a commitment to it, we'll find a place for you. You know, we'll figure out how to get you trained in the right way and, you know, put you to work in a meaningful way that way too. And my guess is the metals business is probably the same way. You know, there's some training involved for it too, but you know, if you find the right person that's interested and engaged, that wants to learn and, you know, figure out how to incorporate the Bryzos methods into this, man, the world's yours right now, I would tell you.
And especially using Bryzos, which is you really just need to know what you need to buy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the bar, if you will, is coming down as far as, I remember when I started in the metals industry, I didn't know which way was up for, I mean, an extended period of time.
There's so many options and variables. It's unbelievable. Like it's, the amount of noise you have to sort through. Like,
yeah.
I've been doing this for 30 years, and there's probably still stuff like every couple of whatever is like, oh,
didn't know that. I didn't know that could happen.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing how many different ways the same thing can get messed up.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always remember this time, I think we shipped something that was supposed to go to Houston and ended up in South Korea or something like that. And, you know, we said, you know, keep it. Don't worry about it. We'll get another piece cut or right. something like that. But I think that the you know, spending part of the problem is it takes a year and a half, in my opinion, to really understand what you're doing in this industry.
I would agree.
And that's really just so you have some sort of baseline fluency.
Yeah.
In all the different specs, grades, dims, all the
this like is you not gotta, something you're going to learn in some school classroom.
It's kind of not.
This is on the job training 100%.
And there's a jargon as well, yep. right? And yep.
I would argue there's two or three jargons.
Well, per product type.
Well, yeah. Yeah. There's what the office calls it. There's what the guys in the field call it.
Yeah.
And then there's like a whole nother like subset like in between all of that stuff too. And I guarantee you, because like, I see it every day. Like our guys come in from the field and they're like, you know, they'll call in for something and somebody in the office will be like, what the hell are they talking about? And I'm like, oh, they're asking for this, that, and that. And they're like, how do you know that? I'm like,
turn the Rosetta Stone a little bit.
I've been doing this for 30 years. That's why I know.
Well, it's kind of like, yeah. People definitely have a favorite. Like when you're talking about pipe, is it a stick?
Yep.
Is it a joint? Or is it a piece?
Yep.
Like
a length.
A length. Yeah. A length of pipe.
Yep.
And I think I say piece.
I say a stick. I use all of them interchangeably.
It might depend.
Just to mess with people.
Who you're talking to. But I think that people kind of feel strongly about that. I think there are people who are like stick people, joint people.
Oh, I'm sure they are.
And I'm one of them. Like, I didn't know you said stick. I kind of feel differently about you. Right. Right. It kind of changes the whole thing. We might be done.
What do you feel about if I start saying SRLs?
Yes, single randoms, which, by the way, for anyone who's not, I guess, so who was not in the industry, it needs to be known that there are these pipe lengths that are...
It's the most convoluted product in the entire history of mankind, in my opinion.
This is why it takes a year and a half, by the way.
I agree, yeah.
Because, like, can I get 200 feet of pipe in singles? And you're like... Sure.
Well, so on our from a
but 218 feet show up, yep. They're all different lengths.
Well, put it in my perspective, we order a single random thinking we're getting 20 feet and I need 20 feet and they ship me 18 feet.
Or you want two singles or 18?
And I'm sitting here like I need to order another piece of pipe. They only ship me 18 and I order 20. And then they're like, well, no, we shipped you a single. And I'm like, no, but I ordered 20.
Dude.
I need 20. I need a. So literally when we write a PO, I have to like write minimum 20 foot lengths. And then the vendor's like, well, that's going to take me extra time because they have to literally go out in the yard and measure it. So it's a minimum 20 foot length.
All right. I'll have you weigh in on
this.
And
I'm like, I don't care. I need a minimum 20 foot length.
So when we were doing our ERP system, and distribution. So we had this exact thing happen, which is we would get a purchase order from somebody. We then create the sales order.
Yep.
And then work order and get down to the yard, whatever. So you'd look at the salesperson who at times could be accurate, at times be inaccurate, whatever. So they would read it and it would say single random length mm-hmm. on the purchase order. And then they would write, or it would say 20-foot min.
Right.
And then the...
That's me.
That's you. It might have been you guys. And so then the sales guy writes it up as a single.
And that's where the rub lies.
And then so there's this idea of a single 20-foot min, or if someone says, I need a 21-footer,
yeah,
what does that mean to you?
That's a... I'm probably ordering a double at that point.
So does it mean...
By the way, we've lost your audience completely.
That's all right. This is like, this is really in the weeds. But like, so 21-footer would be...
No. 21-footer, it's in the definition. It's in the definition of a single.
But is it between 21 feet and... Is it between 21 dead and less than 22?
Yeah. I mean, this is where you fall in that gray zone. You're pushing your luck. When I see that number, that's when I started being like, God dang it. Like, I'm not going to get what I need. I know I'm not going to get what I need. Like, it's a roll of the dice. And
so you'll just size up.
Yeah.
Typically.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, if it's even if it's
or I'll go back to the drawing and I'll be like, do I really need 21 foot? Or is like somebody just overdoing it? Like, cause the way the drawings are, you know, they'll take off through the fittings,
uh-huh.
And you know, the fittings may be, you know, 3 or 4 feet of the length of the spool.
Sure.
Okay. Well, I don't need 21 feet then. I need 18 feet of pipe. Okay. Well, then I'm back down in my number there, what I actually need. I don't need that 21 foot. And my estimator, you know, was over conservative at that point, which I get why he's doing that.
Well, it causes so much trouble. Like the amount of trouble 6 inches can make.
Yeah. And look, our estimators, you know, I want them to be realistic. So we tell them to round up so that because all fall, you know, when we're cutting pipe, there's a certain amount of waste. And
yeah.
you can't use up every last inch of the pipe. You know, it's just unrealistic that way. So we round up, you know, when the dimension shows like 4'4", I just say that's 5 foot, you know,
right.
That way. So we take that into account. And even at the end of an estimate, we may add another 5-6% of the length just to make sure we have it all covered. These are the little nuances. Again, a year and a half it takes. This is what it takes on our side of things just to, you know your business.
And it's really remarkable as you're learning that you can read something, read it again, look at it, and you could still have something explode, not literally, but something, a problem occur.
Yeah.
And something that you've reviewed endlessly.
Oh, yeah.
And it just happens, bang, right in front of you. You're just like,
yep.
Got it.
I mean,
what's wrong with me?
My interpretation versus, you know, somebody else's, there's going to be a little variability there. I get that, you know. So, you know, you try to standardize the process as much as you can, you know. That's how we try to run our business that way. You know, the way I do an estimate, you know, I expect, we have a standard way we download everything into the same document, and, you know, so that way when I'm reviewing the estimate, you know, I can go to the same page and look for the same data
mm-hmm.
when I'm analyzing, you know, whoever's doing that estimate, you know, that way we can review it, you know, consistently that way. You know, we're not reinventing the dang wheel every single time. My mind would explode weekly if we had to do that. Yeah.
It'd be excessively painful week after week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, hopefully the AI tool that can adjust
that would be nice.
Drawing.
So that literally is one of our new project managers that started with us in December is the one who's really kind of been introducing us to that. He's been using it at his old firm, and, you know, he's kind of been like, hey, you guys should consider this. And we're like, oh, we've been kind of talking about that, but you know what you're doing, so why don't you demonstrate for us?
Well, we're developing right now, you know, this bill of material upload mm-hmm. that's, you know, you can take a picture of something and it instantly will price it, right? And it's the kind of thing where it's the reason these things take a long time to develop is because you don't want it to be wrong.
Yeah. And again, all these little nuances, man, it's easy to get something just a little, you get a 3,000-pound fitting versus a 300-pound something. I mean, that's wildly different.
It's wildly different. Yeah. And it can, you know, it depends on certain many things, but if you have something that was systemically wrong.
Right.
And this was this, that great deal, a fabricator, somebody's, you just got to make sure you're right.
Yep.
You know, and so I think that, so you're talking about, you know, you've been thinking about a decision for a year and a half or what, it's not hard to find yourself there. Yeah. Because you're like, as you said, the way we're doing things, but it does, the flip side, that's what I think's happened since COVID, is there's people are starting to have trust and like, okay, this is getting really good.
Yeah.
And it's, I know my competitors are using it now, or
that is definitely the case.
And so you're like, okay, well, we need to get our act together or whatever, because if they're using it, you know, whether if we 100% trust it or not, they're zipping these things around so fast now that we're not even getting the shot we'd like to have. So I think that's the major impetus.
At that point, it doesn't matter if we have the biggest shop in town. We're not the most efficient.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, hopefully you can pick up the sub work. You know, you guys can go through the trouble of quoting it for us, outsourcing a little bit.
There's an aspect of that too. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, thanks for coming. I'm going to get us out of here.
No, this
was fun to chat. I could do it for a really long time, but
I know. And I appreciate you guys' flexibility. I know we kind of got pushed back a little bit.
You know, it's irregardless. We're just going to make it happen.
Exactly.
You know, so thanks, man. I appreciate it.
No, this was awesome. Thank you.
All right, cool. Thanks.